Good afternoon. I'm April Vogelsang. I'm Vice President of Medical Management, and I'm here with my dyad, Dr. Good, and I'll let him do some introductions because I know he wasn't here when we went around the room.
I was struggling through Chicago traffic. I'm Bob Good. I'm the Chief Medical Officer for Health Alliance. I'm a practicing internist at Carl, and I've been there for about 22 years. And I can tell you that we integrated Epic on September the 11th, 2011, because I was struggling through it with the rest of everybody else. So, April?
All right. Well, I'm here today to really, we're here today to talk about how we have utilized and capitalized on our risk adjustment activities into our medical management functions at the health plan and across the system. So the program I'm really sharing about today came as a result of a vision, and that was we had a lot of nurse practitioners that were fully credentialed on our team, integral in completing in-home comprehensive health risk assessments. And we were being challenged both internally and as a system, how can we better utilize those nurse practitioners? As well as those nurse practitioners saying to us, we can really do more. We can do more than just go in the home and do a comprehensive health risk assessment and never see the member again. They wanted to have a bigger impact on their day-to-day activities. So those of you who may not know, we have a completely internal risk adjustment program at our health plan. So that means that we employ the nurse practitioners, we have coding professionals that do not only retrospective medical record review, but also go out and provide consultative services to physicians. So we were in a really unique position to utilize those skill sets in a little bit of a different way. Also, we were having some issues with our medical expenses, and could we come up with a model that utilized that distinct skill set to help us reduce our medical expend and improve our quality outcomes and have better case management solutions for those highest risk members. So today, that program is referred to as our very high risk case management model. And it's a key aspect of our completely redesigned case management model. It sits at the very top of the pyramid. We touch about 1% of our overall patient population as a part of this program. The program is comprised of our nurse practitioners, nurses, social workers, pharmacists, and medical directors in conjunction and collaboration with the members' physician system team, so their primary care physician and any specialists that they may be seeing. This care team works collaboratively. They go out into members' homes to complete the necessary activities for that member. They may accompany them on a physician visit to help be the liaison and interpreter and advocate for their health care needs. Because this is really the sickest of the sick, our team spends a lot of time focusing on advanced care planning, helping them prepare for making a decision around hospice, making those transitions from home to a long-term care facility. So as it's been mentioned here several times today, our social work team is key and integral to that. I want to spend just a few minutes, even though it's not specifically related to the topic at hand here, but we have spent a considerable amount of time over the last 18 months redesigning our care delivery model, and I wanted to just give a brief overview of that remaining care delivery model for which this is a part of. So we have a complex case management program that is completely redesigned, and we intend and do deliver that in three different ways. We have a delegated case management model that is really reserved for those level 3 certified patient-centered medical home. We truly believe that case management is best delivered in the provider's office and by the provider team. So wherever possible, we want to delegate those case management services, particularly for those partners where we have a risk arrangement with them. The second area is we have an embedded complex case management model, so some of our highest volume providers who maybe don't have the infrastructure yet built to be completely delegated, but have the desire to embed our case management staff inside their facilities to help teach them how to do it better or collaborate on those case management activities. And then the last is our truly traditional dedicated telephonic case management model that's housed within the health plan. The change that we made there is really to make it more of a geographically based model. So we have geographic pods that are becoming aligned with their specific areas across the state of Illinois. And the primary purpose of that is so that they become very knowledgeable and in tune with not only the providers in those settings, but also what are the support services and resources that can be tapped into.
Easy but logical model to put together with Carl. How difficult has it been with the other physicians in the outline?
Well, we actually have an embedded model with one of our largest providers out, actually two of our largest providers out of the three in Washington State. So they're using the embedded model. We have one provider system who's really operating in a delegated model, even though they haven't signed the agreement on the bottom of the sheet. And we have two others that are very interested in that and willing to come on board. So they're interested in that. I think particularly those at risk, because that payment model is already there. I think we'd have a harder time selling it to providers who weren't at risk and didn't have any dollars at stake to be able to manage the membership better. Traditionally, we only had an end-stage renal disease specialty program, and we're expanding that to include NICU and high-risk peds, as well as an oncology program. We also have a care transition intervention program, which is really modeled off the Coleman model. It's not that exact model. It's Coleman-like. But that's our post-discharge program, where we follow the member for 30 days post-hospitalization through weekly interactions with the member in an effort primarily to reduce readmission. And then everything else underneath falls into our disease management and wellness, where we have a variety of health coaches that can provide more of that ongoing support in terms of weight loss, lab control, those types of activities. So going back to our very high-risk case management program, our team, like I said at the beginning, is comprised of a nurse practitioner, two nurses, a social worker, as well as a pharmacist and medical director that can help support that team. It is never our intent for this team to replace care that they're receiving through their primary care physician or through their specialty physicians. And we communicate that with them, and we help support them in establishing those regular visits with their primary care physician. Our nurse practitioners do not provide treatment. It's completely diagnosis and assessment, and then linking with the appropriate care provider. We do provide some point of care testing, so we're doing hemoglobin A1C testing in the home and looking to do fit check for colorectal screening. So when we identify a member, our care team meets prior to going to visit the member for the first time. We have a report that clearly tells us where the gaps in care are, where the potential missed diagnosis codes are for the HCC coding, as well as the opportunities to further engage the member in case management. So we review that report, and at the very first visit, both the nurse and the nurse practitioner complete that jointly at the member's home. At the conclusion of our visit, our nurses are equipped with iPads. They do the complete assessment on that. Our nurse case managers utilize Vital, although we're considering making a shift, so I wrote down your solution there as we continue to evaluate that. But after the visit, that comprehensive health risk assessment does get loaded into pretty much our largest providers that have Epic. We can automatically upload that into the Epic system for them. And then for those that don't, we upload that into our care management system, which is Vital today. So our nurse practitioner, so our remaining staff at Health Alliance know that we completed that assessment, what we found, what the opportunities were, And we can provide that then hard copy or fax to the provider's office. So the goal there is to make sure that the treating physicians and the ongoing care management team have that information readily available to them for future reference. We have had some pretty positive outcomes as a result of this. Obviously, one of the main goals is to refer more members into case management, which we've obviously been successful at in keeping them involved in the program. Our risk scores have seen significant improvement. I think this is not only because of our efforts, but because we're actually helping the member get to the physician, and those conditions are then continually updated and evaluated by the treating physicians. We've seen a 99% member satisfaction. The patients love this program. We get a lot of requests from people to be in the program who technically don't meet the criteria for the program, but we do go out and do an initial assessment with them just to help continue with member retainment and engagement with that. We do have some medical expense return on investment as a result of this. We have seen an increase in outpatient utilization as a result of this program, which I think is expected. But overall, our per member per month costs have decreased by about 15 to 20% as a result of being involved in this program compared to members that are not. So we actually, this is our team, and actually one of our nurses, Denise Sexton here, is our high-risk case management nurse. And we have a program at Carle called the Way to Be program. So people, all 6,000 of our employees receive various Way to Be's every day, and we have a quarterly winner and then an annual winner. And Denise became our annual winner this year across our system because of the work that she has done for two members that were involved in our high-risk program. And so I'm just going to share her story here.
Winning awards wasn't top of mind for Denise Sexton when she visited a member's home two summers ago.
Safety was a big concern with them. There had been falls.
One of the members had taken it upon himself as a retired carpenter to cut out his bathtub in a crescent moon.
He had taken a sawzall and cut out the side of his tub so they could step into it.
A creative solution, but this nurse of 24 years knew there was a better fix.
I knew there was funds available at the City of Urbana for home improvements, and with that, it allowed them to come in and get the bathroom remodeled.
The renovation included widening doors for wheelchairs and replacing this with this. Denise helped another family in a similar way as well. The annual Way to Be Award was just the icing on the cake.
As a group, I think it speaks to our dedication to do whatever it takes to help out our members in every way possible.
This level of care and service exemplifies the organization's behavior standards.
We have a lot of opportunities to touch our patients in unique ways. A lot of our services do touch members where they're at, in their lives in a little more personal level that I think leads to a lot of these stories and nominations that we hear about.
For Denise, buzzing through problems to help members is just another day at the office.
Thank you, Dennis. So Denise did not want any of this recognition. I mean, she just viewed this as doing her job. This is what she does every day. That's all right.
It was so good we wanted it.
So this was a creative way to help two members and their families stay in their home and to be able to age in their home and actually one of them die in their home. And actually on the day Denise found out she received this award, one of the members passed away. So it was just really emotional for her and just help to bring home that, you know, everything, we can get caught up in the task that we do every day and forget that we can have really meaningful impact in people's lives, and doing something as unique as this to be able to help them stay in their home and work collaboratively with social service companies to make that happen is very impactful and kind of goes back to that social grant that John Gorman talked about. Really piqued my interest because we're already doing that today on our own, and it'd be nice to have some support with that. Further enhancements that we're looking to make with our very high-risk case management program. Today, that program is within our risk adjustment team. So we have a medical management team and a director of risk adjustment in that team. And we have kept that under that structure, and we're looking to actually fold that now into medical management since this has really progressed from being a pilot to a full-blown program. So looking to make that integration here sometime in the future. We're also in discussions with Carl to pilot actually housing our nurse practitioners within the provider system and having them complete their assessments and follow up in the Epic so that it is readily available and more visible within the provider's treatment plan. Today it gets embedded as a PDF that people have to go through and find and be purposeful in finding that assessment. So being able to make an actual encounter would be very insightful and informative to the care team. And then also our coding team, you know, they comb through thousands of charts a year. They meet with hundreds of providers around the opportunity to improve coding. But we see very little referrals coming from that particular team. And I think that that is one missed opportunity that we're looking over the next year to see if our coding team can have a greater impact in recognizing and identifying those members that would benefit not only from the very high-risk case management program, but any of our services that we provide. So with that, I'll hand it over to Dr. Good.
Thank you. I should get that part of the slide where they give applause when I start. Okay, so my role in all of this, and I've been with Health Alliance officially now for 6 months, so I'm the newbie and certainly the rookie in the world of healthcare, but I'm not in the world of healthcare itself, and this is like my 40th year. And my objective here is to integrate our system so that Health Alliance, Carl, and our partners that we have throughout the system provide the highest quality care. My focus is entirely on quality. So all of that revolves around disease management and population health. It's been talked about multiple times today. It's a key part of what we do. It is the action plan of the quality indicators. You know, part of this whole business of coding is to make sure that we have enough funding so that we can outreach and do the other things we need to do for people who don't have. And we can do a lot more for them from a quality perspective for people who have socially problems. And I assume that a lot of you in here are living in rural areas. Can I just kind of see a set of hands of people that serve rural areas? Yeah. So, you know, and as I listened to the MIPS talk this morning, it occurred to me that, you know, this is going to be a challenge down the road because now it's displacing money, more money, again, into the urban areas because the rural areas don't have the data to support what they're going to need going down the road, and that's just going to be more funding taken out. So it's a problem. So how do we do this? We can't, you know, in the rural areas particularly, but in all offices, there's really nobody really embedded making sure the coding is proper for us to maximize, particularly Medicare Advantage patients. There's just not enough time. You got to review the charts. You got to review the old records. You got to maintain those records. And then you got to make sure the proper CPT code goes with it. That is just a lot to weigh on physicians. So we do have a CPT code, or ICD-9 code for that, reaction to severe stress. A part of the program that April kind of referred to a little bit, we embedded into a physician's office, one of the high volume offices within Carl, an internal medicine office. This is actually some data from a patient that I had the coding people select, an 82-year-old female that was originally coded as an 82-year-old female, and that resulted in an annual fee of about a little shy of $5,000 a month, or an annual fee of $5,000. If we then they kind of had a coder that kind of went through things, and and did kind of an intermediate, added some things, got the physician to add some things, and it resulted in a little bit of improvement. Once we embedded a coder into the office itself, it went from $5,000 to almost $16,000 for that particular patient. And you can kind of see the codes that they've put up there. This is a patient who not only was elderly, had diabetes, had vascular complications, and had heart failure. That's not an uncommon case scenario in an internal medicine office. This pilot study was run between October of 12 and February of 2013. It resulted in an improvement of about $117,000 in CMS allowances. But I think importantly, as the coders went through it, they also found a need for vaccines, particularly pneumonia vaccines, laboratory tests that need to be done in these patients and be so they can monitor their health care properly, other health care screenings that didn't get done, colorectal screening as an example, and just determination of their weight, which has a lot, again, to do with their overall health care. So other things happened from the quality of care perspective other than just the dollars that were involved. The program that she alerted to, we review about 10% of the risk-adjusted population a year in the Medicare Advantage program. It has 5.5 FTEAPNs, and we have a medical director that oversees that activity and makes sure that we follow our protocols and programs appropriately. And they identify these care gaps, which are just really essential to help these folks out. Overall, this whole thing of case management not only improves, you know, our income component to this and what we get reimbursed, but it also improves our documentation. It helps our physicians know what they need to document. They're seeing the patients, they're doing the work. They oftentimes don't document it properly. And we've found things within Epic to help be helpful tools to help them do that. So when they order tests, they do it appropriately, and we make sure that we code appropriately. And then the advanced directives, which is an initiative we have this coming year within Carle to help improve the number of patients over age 50 with advanced directives. And I think that's an important piece going down the road from a quality perspective. The healthcare assessment in 15 had about a little shy of 2,300 patients. It was a little bit less than that last year, but it resulted in a benefit of a little over $3 million. So a significant component to what was there. We started just recently another pilot project in HCC coding, again, because physicians do not have the time or the resources or the thought process to go through all of that. And unfortunately, by the time we say hello to a patient, work through the history, get a physical exam done, the most important part of that visit, the plan, assessment plan and shared decision-making process, has very limited time. So we try to develop through Epic, and we'll see how this works. So I don't have any data. I can't answer any questions other than we've got about 200-plus rules that we've developed to look for and identify patients who probably have higher codes that they ought to be looked for. And that will help us as we, again, look at more embedment of coders into offices, displaying alerts to the physicians and activating codes. So far, it was about 55 providers that are involved in this project. I was involved with it over the last year or so. I think it's helpful. Through this whole, yes, sir. I told you not to ask any questions about that. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay.
So in your rule set, do you have rules that identify overcoding?
Yes. And the other part of that is to make sure, I think it was brought up earlier, that codes don't hang there for too long a time, that it's done on an annual basis. Yes. That was easy. You can ask more questions now. So we try to go through this MEAT process, and I think you probably have all seen this in the literature, monitoring the conditions and working through this whole process. You can read just as easy as I, but it's a way that not only are our coders, working through the process of coding properly, but caring for the patients and helping the healthcare team do that in a better way. And, of course, the wellness examination is a good place for proper coding and get to the meat of things for patients as well. How many ICD-10s did it take to screw in the light bulb? Just one. But if he falls off the ladder, it's 140,000 different possibilities. So that's the short and long of it from our presentation. And we don't want to get in the way of dinner, but do any of you have any other questions or comments? Yes, sir. April.
Do you guys risk adjust for commercial population or just Medicare Advantage commercial?
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any, do you utilize telemedicine for capturing any HCC codes rather than in-house visits or anything like that?
We have, FaceTime is an option. We have utilized it in select, particularly with the commercial, is why we started that, because we were having a hard time getting members to agree to an in-home health risk assessment. But even that uptake has been low. But we do offer it, as well as offering if a member wants to come into our office rather than us go into their home. But there just hasn't, we've struggled with uptake on the commercial side.
But yeah, we have too, that's what I was asking.
We're very interested in that. Does anybody have experience with that in their own plans? With success. Okay, yeah, I mean, we really want to get, to me, it's developing a visual relationship with the patient, which is what I think really optimizes case management in its best way.
Did you incentivize, would you incentivize the commercial population with a gift card or something to get them to have that visit?
We're not incentivizing the in-home comprehensive health risk assessment. We do offer an incentive around a paper-based health risk assessment, which we use as an initial screening tool to help us determine, do they need case management? Would they benefit from a chart review? Or what type of act? It kind of serves as a triage tool for us. So we do offer an incentive for that paper-based or telephonically-based HRA.
For the commercial
yes.
side, too.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been successful? Or?
Yeah, I mean, although we see a lot of people when we outreach to them that are willing to do it right with us then on the phone, and then we have a high percentage that mail back as well.
Okay.
Sir?
Yeah, so the ROI, is that true for MA and commercial, or are you finding when you can get to a commercial patient, are you finding a similar ROI as what you found here?
That would be both, but I would say 99% of our population is Medicare Advantage
okay.
that is in that program.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
Other questions? Thank you. Good. Well, today we delved in pretty deep on four specific topics, five specific topics, I guess, five, at the detail level to give us a feel for what organizations are doing enterprise-wide, collectively working with the health system, health plan, and medical groups. In just the couple of minutes that we have left, do you have any examples of activities, integration activities, touch points within your organizations that you're finding traction with? I know several of you, I know Geisinger and Sharp, for example, are doing a lot of work in the space of the customer experience enterprise-wide. Some of the rest of you may be working in other areas, because we do have just a couple of minutes here to wrap up. Anyone willing to share some of the things that you're doing in the spaces we've talked about today or other ones enterprise-wide? Sharp? Since I called on you, Melissa, what can you do, right?
So I think what you're referring to is the fact that we share a kind of a strategic imperative called the Sharp Experience. So it's basically our vision to be the best place to work, practice medicine, and receive care. It's a very comprehensive program that stretches across the entire organization, regardless of entity, so the health plan, all the hospitals, the medical groups. It includes a Sharp University where we train leaders, and so the leaders get together once a quarter, and we have a curriculum in which we work on our cultural initiatives, including right now we're working on high reliability. So we are looking to become a high reliability organization, zero defects, zero harm. So we share best practices, we have training, we do role playing. We also have a physician leadership academy, so all the executives, the administrative executives, attend that with our physicians, and those are classes that are ongoing. We also do capstone projects. So we have a very deep cultural base, and it includes top decile performance. We have seven pillars of excellence. All our reporting is done through this. All our report cards are online for everyone to see. So any employee of the 18,000 employees or the physicians or volunteers can go online in the SharpNet and take a look at anyone's report cards and how we're doing. And those report cards are actually done by pillars. So there's a lot of transparency. But we put a lot of effort into the cultural imperative of top decile and experience. But we do start purposely with best place to work. There's all types of quality metrics that we look at. Every leader has to have the quality metrics: employee satisfaction, physician satisfaction, member satisfaction, as well as safety. So it serves us well when we're looking at performance and when we set goals. And it culminates every year in an all-staff meeting where every employee is invited to this meeting. There are half-day sessions. There's three of them. They're held at the convention center. We celebrate the pillar awards, meaning organizations in either department, division, or individual teams that have created top decile performance and, you know, kind of set the tone for the next year. So culture is very key to the success for Sharp and its entities.
Thank you. We're also doing a lot of those same things. I think that the Carl Leadership Institute, I heard mentioned earlier about physician leadership development, and I think that's critical important to grow it from up through Carl. The best practice we share across not only through Health Alliance, but also through Carl and to our other partners that we have within the Health Alliance network. So I think that's also important as medical directors get together. Quality is also a key part of this, where we have quality officers, medical officers from each of our major partners sharing quality initiatives throughout the Health Alliance network. And then we also want the transparency issue on our website in the future, and we're just putting this together now, will be my patient satisfaction. And so rather than depending upon some of the crap that's out there from some of these other websites, you can go to Carl, and if somebody likes or doesn't like, and as long as they don't say it in a four-letter word, you can read it about the practitioners. So it's out there, and would you see this physician, or do you recommend this physician? That score will be out there. So it's hopefully will be a good thing.